Okay, moving on to number 22, the Moss Landing Power Plant backflushing settlement. Item 22, Mr. Briggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've had a number of proposals before you in the past regarding this money that's available from the settlement that the board is responsible for directing. And today we have Amanda Byrne to present a couple other projects. If you stand over there, Harvey, it seemed to work for him. There it is. Certain vortex right there.
Okay, good. Good morning.
Good morning.
Amanda Byrne. I oversee the Moss Landing Environmental Project Fund, and I'm here today to ask your approval to fund two proposals. These funds were earmarked and approved for use by this board on July 11, 2003. The purpose of the funds was to primarily support two plans, the Regional Board's Toxic Hotspot Plan and the Monterey Bay Sanctuary's Plan for Agricultural Land. Both plans emphasize implementation of on-farm management practices to prevent non-point source pollution. $2.85 million were allocated for projects to implement non-point source pollution projects on farms and also education related to those. And $950,000 were allocated for water quality monitoring, both associated with those projects and to perform watershed level trend monitoring within the lower Salinas watershed. The two projects today, there's two proposals. The first is from the Resource Conservation District of Monterey County, and they have two projects within their proposal. The first is to repair a degraded stream channel. And the second project within their proposal is to convert two agricultural drainage ditches into vegetated treatment systems. The second proposal will be performed by the UC Davis Department of Toxicology, and they propose to assess the performance of the vegetated treatment systems, which are being implemented in 1B, to reduce pesticides and toxicity. So the first project by the Monterey RCD is the stream channel restoration. The goal of this project is to reduce sediment loss to our waterways, and they propose to do that by reducing peak flow through the channel and also by stabilizing the channel bed and banks. And this is the current condition of the site, the amount of erosion. This is about 1,000 feet. The primary cause of this erosion has been the increase in impervious surface area, both associated with development in the city of Salinas and also with the increase in plastic sheeting associated with strawberry farms. And just as a side note, I wanted to say that this is actually a common example of what happens when impervious surfaces are increased. Upstream of sites, this is what happens to our creeks, and that's why projects like low-impact development, which reduce impervious surfaces, are so important for protecting water quality. The project is being designed by a group of engineers and hydrologists and will incorporate future development associated with the city of Salinas. They propose to solve this problem in two parts. The first is that they're going to establish an off-channel sediment detention basin so that during peak flows, water will be held within the sediment basin for a period of days to hours and then be released slowly back into the channel. That should reduce the stream power and thereby prevent the further down cutting of the channel. And the second part will be to stabilize the banks, and they will do that by using reliable and environmentally sensitive techniques such as willow crib walls. They'll use native vegetation, and they will also install some fencing to limit grazing at the site.
Who owns the property?
I'm sorry?
Who owns the property?
Where is it located?
It's along Santa Rita Creek.
West of Salinas. Amanda, I'm over here. Over here.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Do we know who owns the property?
The RCD knows who owns the property.
The RCD owns the property?
No, the RCD knows who owns the property. I do not. I have not been told the property owners.
I'm just wondering, you know, how are they involved and are they putting money in? And
yes. Okay. The RCD, any project that the RCD implements on private property always requires a certain amount of cost match. But yes, the property owners are participating in the cost of the project.
Amanda, can you tell me where this, you said it's on Santa Rita Creek, is this west of the 101 in between 101 and Espinosa Lake?
Is it? Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay.
All right. The second project associated with the RCD's proposal is to install vegetated treatment systems. The goal of these projects is to reduce nutrient pesticides and turbidity in our waterways. They will accomplish this goal by converting two 500-foot field ditches into vegetated treatment systems. And a lot of the work associated with this project will be determining optimal operations of those vegetated systems in order to maximize pollution reduction potential. So the RCD decided to choose field ditches for several reasons to install these treatment systems. One is that the length to width ratio of the ditch is optimal, meaning that the water has a long residence time and has a lot of contact with the vegetation in the system. The second is that it's close to the source. They're right adjacent to the field. A third reason, which was important for Regional Board staff, was that it doesn't modify or impact current habitat that's already in place. And finally, it doesn't use up valuable crop acreage, which increases the likelihood that growers would be willing to adopt the practice. And I wanted to add that we know that vegetated treatment systems can be effective at reducing pollution. What's different about this project is that we're taking the model of a vegetated treatment system and we're trying to squeeze it inside of these on-farm field ditches, and it's going to be associated with the working farm. So a lot of these treatment systems that are in place in other places in the United States, east of the Mississippi, are oftentimes off-field, and they're not these long. They don't have the long length-to-width ratio. So associated with that, a lot of what the Monterey RCD is going to need to do is to manage these systems for certain chemical, biological, and physical parameters to optimize the pollution reduction potential. The RCD is requesting $500,000 for both these projects, and they are providing a cost match of $177,000, which is 35% of the total funds. The second proposal before you today will be performed by the UC Davis Department of Toxicology. And this project is associated with the Monterey RCD's vegetated treatment systems. And the goal is to determine the effectiveness of those vegetated treatment systems to reduce pesticides and toxicity. And they propose to do that by measuring toxicity in water and sediment, and also by determining the causes of toxicity. And researchers at UC Davis will determine water column toxicity, by using the standard test organism Cirrodaphnia. They'll do this in situ and in laboratory tests, both in the vegetated treatment systems and also at other sites as a comparison. They will also, for sediment toxicity, they'll use the standard test organism Hyalella. And if toxicity is found, they'll perform further tests to determine the causes of toxicity. And I'd like to add that for staff within the Ag Waiver Unit, this is particularly pertinent for us. A preliminary review of the first year of the Ag Waiver data has shown us that within the lower Salinas and Santa Maria areas, we're finding widespread and acute toxicity. Any information that can provide us in terms of both the causes of toxicity and ways that we can prevent toxicity is important to us at this time. And we'll be back in front of you in July to provide you more information about the data.
When you use the word causes of toxicity, do you mean sources?
Yes.
Okay. Are you going to be identifying chemicals?
Yes. When currently I'm working with the agricultural community on developing a follow-up monitoring plan, which I will describe to you in July. So they are requesting $136,380 to perform the monitoring, and they're providing a cost match of $35,600, which is 26% of the match. And staff feels like that these projects will provide us with water quality benefit, and we seek your approval to direct funds towards these two projects.
How much money will be left in the fund after that?
There will be, for the projects fund, there'll be $383,000. These are somewhat approximate because we're still getting, we get interest on the money still. And for the monitoring fund, there'll be $113,516.
Would these funds be available to study sea otter diseases?
The criteria is rather tight, and so for the projects have to be related to the first two plans that I mentioned early on in the staff report. The toxic hotspot plan and the Monterey Bay Sanctuaries plan for agricultural lands.
Well, didn't we hear about a disease hotspot of Toxoplasma?
Or is this refers to a specific plan, and I don't know if you know whether the plan addresses the sea otter issue or not, or Toxoplasma.
I believe the toxic hotspot plan that was designated a hotspot in Moss Landing Harbor for metals and pesticides. Correct?
Yes. Well, can it be expanded? You're talking about Moss Landing?
Yes.
Harbor? Well, Moss Landing is an area of a...
But the specific plan is done years ago, so Lori's point was that's a specific...
But can that specific plan be modified?
Not that plan.
Is that part of the settlement agreement?
No. It's a statewide plan. Was it a state board plan with regional board input?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
It was years ago, actually.
Okay.
I had a question.
Go ahead.
Just maybe prompting an add-on here.
Okay.
Amanda, you mentioned the benefit, the broader benefit in terms of the second project as far as the toxicology work and the tie-in with other data that we're getting in terms of toxicity from, all the ag monitoring stations. Could you also comment on the broader benefit from the first project?
Yes. Maybe the first comment that I'll make is that any of the projects from the PG&E serve as demonstration sites, so that, for example, the the farm water quality course that the growers attend to meet their requirements for the ag waiver. They have a field day, and during those field days, they go out and view these kinds of sites, right? So it's serving as a demonstration site, and because of the farm water quality classes, a lot of the growers see these sites and get a feel for whether or not this is something that would work for them. For the stream restoration site, part of the project is fixing this bank, but the portion of the project which is installing the sediment and detention basin, the purpose of that is to solve the root cause of the downcutting, which is the increased flow, which leads to increased stream power. And the impact of installing that sediment basin will not just affect this portion of the stream, but actually the entire length of the stream down to approximately the reclamation canal. So the impact of the project, in the staff report I mentioned that the footprint of the project is about 1,000 feet, but the actual impact of the work will be for the entire length of that tributary.
Okay, what about addressing the core problem, which is the amount of pervious substrate upstream? Is there any effort to work with Salinas on that?
Part of this project is pairing up with the Monterey County Water Resources Agency. And the Monterey County Water Resources Agency, along with the City of Salinas and another stakeholder group, it's a Ready Pack. It's a group that meets to discuss issues such as how do we resolve the annexation of the city, how are we going to address impervious surface areas, discussing ordinances. It's a rather broad based, but so there are discussions to that effect, and the people who are involved in this project are part of the larger discussion.
If you could back flip forward, there's the diagram of that diagram. See the sediment trap?
Yes.
At some point that fills up.
Yes.
And so then what happens?
And then they'll need to clean that out.
Okay. So, you know, the problem is here, this is a nice interim measure to control erosion or sedimentation, but we're not getting at the root problem, which is what's causing this to happen to begin with. So, you know, it's an expenditure of funds for something that is worthwhile. I don't have a problem with mm-hmm. that. But I'd like to see an effort also being applied, you know, upstream where this is happening. Mr. Briggs.
Well, that's exactly the reason that we have been working with the City of Salinas on and really pushing them in conjunction with the Phase 1 stormwater permit on the application of low-impact development, the implementation of low-impact development, to the extent that the board has provided funding for development of the ordinance, and the city has hired a consultant and has started on that work to do exactly that, work on this issue of low-impact development, not only for the areas that are going to be developed in the future, annex and that sort of thing, but also for redevelopment work.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Jeffries.
Amanda, again, is this downstream from the City of Salinas? This particular
yes.
site?
The one thing I want to be clear, the stream, okay, yes, this site here is downstream
okay.
from the City of Salinas. The vegetated treatment systems are not going into this area. The vegetated treatment systems are going to be happening at Elkhorn Slough and Blanco Drain. So those two projects
yeah.
are separate projects.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Well, this particular problem has been an ongoing problem for a number of years since the City of Salinas concreted Santa Rita Creek through the City of Salinas, which in high flows of Santa Rita Creek, the water rushes through that area through the conduit pipe into the agricultural land, which has constantly caused this type of problem historically. And This was when we talked about the stormwater permit with the city of Salinas, and I brought up the issue of monitoring upstream and downstream. This is the very same creek that I was talking about, and if you remember that I challenged the city of Salinas staff that was in their sphere of influence, and they denied that, and then they recanted that. And the development that's going to be happening is upstream of, not all of it, but majority of the development of Salinas, which their project going through LAFCO now, is going to be upstream of the Santa Rita Creek. Now, are we also looking, I just maybe go a little bit far from what we're doing right now, but are we looking at what the city of Salinas is going to do with Santa Rita Creek upstream with their development? Because if they continue to concrete that in, as they have in the past, then all that's going to do is going to accelerate that flow when we have high flows, like as we have this last winter. And this is going to cause more of this downstream in ag lands, and eventually this flows into Espinosa Lake and then into Morro Coho and on down the Elkhorn Slough area, which is going to cause a lot of siltation problems. Just keeps on going. I don't know if you have all the answers.
I don't have all the answers.
But does anybody on staff have more answers?
I can't answer the stormwater questions and what stormwater staff is doing. I can tell you that I have participated on that ReadyPAC panel, which includes the City of Salinas and the Monterey County Water Agency, to discuss these kinds of issues. I know that for this particular project, the design plans for that retention basin are taking into account future development. So I think, you know, we certainly, staff from the non-point source unit have told the city and the Monterey County Water Agency numerous times that the current paving of the channels and the increase in impervious surface areas could cause non-point source impacts.
Well, let's see. Is there an EIR being prepared for the development that Mr. Jeffries is speaking of?
I can't answer that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I think it is because they have a tentative project in front of LAFCO, and if that is the case, then they would have to have some environmental documents to support.
Well, it sounds like maybe we should be submitting comments
I would think so, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Can you check on the status of that?
Yeah, I don't remember where they are in the process.
Yeah, and then who our staff person is or is going to be that could...
Well, I know Donette Dunaway was just up there in Salinas on Wednesday or Tuesday for a meeting on that topic that I was just describing to you, which is our main effort in terms of trying to get low-impact development in place.
Well, maybe this is a place to do it.
Mr. Chair, just to follow that up, because I think it's a critical issue with stormwater runoff for this board, is because what the city of Salinas is, my understanding, what they're proposing is somewhere between 14 and 18,000 residential units, with more units per acre and narrower streets, which means that there's going to be a lot more runoff from roof drains and less area for water to percolate, because there's going to be less yards. And so, with narrower streets, there's going to be, even if they use a material that would percolate the water, there's going to be less area for that water to percolate in, too. So I think that sooner, and I know the staff's working with the city of Salinas, but as I know, developers resist to do anything more than they have to, for cost-wise, and of course everybody's looking at affordable housing. But on the other hand, this could cause, with that type of development, could cause major discharge, stormwater discharge, especially with, as an experience with this last winter.
Well, and exacerbate a problem that's already been demonstrated in the watershed.
Yes.
So, Lori, what can the board do with trying to influence an outcome with, in terms of development standards?
Well, I think they're already doing it under the stormwater permit and commenting on the CIR.
Well, but does that mean that we have the leverage to actually force them to put in pervious substrates or swales?
Force the developers?
Yeah.
Force the city to force the developers?
Yeah.
That's something that staff is actively working on,
okay.
And our position is that if they don't include those design standards, they have to demonstrate how what they do have satisfies the maximum extent practicable standards. And in terms of the cost to the developer, Donette's got some information that the costs are actually less of doing low-impact development, so I think it would be very difficult for them to demonstrate that something other than these low-impact standards would satisfy MEP.
Okay.
But that's the regulatory vehicle that staff is using.
Okay.
And it's, we're not just relying on the language on the permit. We sent the city a fairly aggressive letter along the lines that Lori was just describing, where we said we consider low-impact development to be MEP unless they can demonstrate otherwise. We had to provide that language legally, but we did lay that on the line as a follow-up, rather than just relying on the permit language.
And was that letter in reference to this development that Mr. Jeffries is referring to?
Or no, it was for
a general overall?
For their entire permit
okay.
coverage.
Okay. I think we need to send them a more specific letter about this development and our expectations that they will use the standard.
Okay.
And I'd like to see what their reaction is, their written response is when we get it. Mr. Jeffries, anything else you think we ought to be having staff do?
Well, I think the staff can zero in on this very large project, but also, you know, the staff is working to change their overall ordinances for the city of Salinas, so that means that any development in the future would be affected by this new ordinance. So that is a step in the right direction. But I'm really concerned with this massive undertaking by the city of Salinas.
Well, I am too, but I also see it as a great opportunity.
Well, it's a great opportunity to bring some of the 22nd century ideas on how to affect stormwater and also recharging the aquifers.
And reversing the problem that's in the watershed with, you know, erosion and sedimentation.
Very true.
Okay, so maybe we'll get the next EO's report. Mr. Briggs, a little update.
Yeah, it sounds like it'd be a good idea for me to give you another copy of the previous letter that we sent.
That'd be fine. Yeah, I'd like to see that, and maybe, you know, I could have some input on how to maybe redraft that and just make it more kind of project specific.
Mr. Chair?
To this development, yes.
Getting back to the item at hand.
Yes.
I would move approval.
Okay, approval.
Second.
Did anyone else? Yeah, I figured. That's why I'm turning this way. My neck was getting stiff.
I can get stiff this way.
Okay.
I like both projects. I was a little concerned about this one until you told me that it was a demonstration project.
Yeah.
So that's fine. My question is on the vegetative treatment systems.
Yes.
They sound really, really wonderful. But what is the benefit or what's the carrot for the farmer to put those in? Not in this particular demonstration, but why would a farmer put it in? What does he get out of it?
Well, you know, I think we're lucky in our region, and then I feel like our growers are concerned about the fact that there is pollution leaving their farms. And I think in particular with this first year of ag waiver data that we have, we've been talking with the farmers. And especially for toxicity, I think the growers are really somewhat perplexed about what it is that they can do about it. You know, for pesticides, they already have to obtain a license from the Ag Commissioner's office. They're already told there's a certain amount of pesticides that they're allowed to apply. They have to tell them specifically when and where they're going to apply them. And so the fact that we're seeing so much toxicity, despite the fact that they're already under a lot of regulation, a lot of them feel like, well, I'm just not sure what else I can do. I mean, there's certainly things like integrated pest management, sort of, you know, only applying the pesticides where you see that there are problems and those types of techniques, and they will do that. But other than that, I think that it's going to be difficult. That particular constituent will be difficult to address. And the advantage of the vegetative treatment systems is that they've been shown very effective at reducing toxicity and pesticide concentrations, and particularly for the pesticides that are applied in our region, like chlorpyrifos and diazinon and the permethrins. And they address the issue of nutrients as well.
Okay. I mean, if that's a concern of the community, then
right.
Then maybe that's all that they need.
Right.
To actually
well, I mean, certainly, you know, there are some growers that don't, you know, they want to do the right thing, and then there are some growers that don't want to get in trouble.
Okay. So there's a stick.
Yeah.
Also.
So there's a carrot
the stick
and a stick.
Okay. That's fine. That's all.
So
I
the
know.
Carrot is, you know, yeah. these kinds of projects that yeah. we do, right?
Right.
And then there's also the feeling of well.
Because I couldn't see a real good carrot on the vegetative treatment one, because it's not like they're saving water or something.
Right.
They're just helping their friends downstream.
Right. Well, yeah. The other thing that I wanted to point out about the vegetative treatment systems is that when the RCD works with farmers, they're also working on source control. You know, the vegetative treatment system is more pollution control. How do you resolve it once it leaves the farm? But they also do irrigation management and nutrient right. management and other things.
Yeah. And just another thing just for future, I would have liked on the proposed budget for this item.
Yes.
I would like to have seen this broken down by the two projects, the vegetative treatment systems separate from the stream channel stabilization project.
Okay.
Because they are two separate projects.
They are. There's, if you look, the personnel time is not broken up
yeah.
by
yeah, I see there's
project.
Some broken up down at the bottom.
That's
yeah.
right. But you would like to see also
I'd like to see the
whole budget.
Because if you brought us two projects, one of which we didn't like,
okay.
then it's better if we can see what the money thing is, you know.
Okay.
Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. In terms of implementing a demonstration project with the RCD partnering, then does that increase or enhance other funding that's available for implementation to farmers that are going through the water quality program? If they are basing their plan and using this demonstration project as mm-hmm. rationale, mm-hmm. does that add to their ability to get funding, or does that figure into the process in any way? Is there like added value?
Well, in the case of the vegetated treatment systems, what it will do is the RCD is trying to develop a viable model. And once they've done that, they can turn those plans over to the NRCS. And once the NRCS has that information, then they can start using Farm Bill money to put in these kinds of projects. So in that sense, yes.
Okay. Any other board questions or comments? Mr. Jeffries, I think you had a motion.
Still stands, Mr. Chair.
And was there a second? Dr. Bowker, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you very much.